The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Johnson, Judge Jessen, Judge Kirk, the Honorable Matthew E. Johnson presiding.
Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today's date, for the sake of the audio record, today's date is October 13, 2021. This panel of the court today has six cases on its agenda, four of which will be submitted with oral argument by Zoom, and two of which will be submitted without oral argument, solely on the briefs. The first case set for oral argument is number A21-509, in the matter of the welfare of the child of LRD and YFK. Counsel for appellant, you may, I think as both attorneys know, you each will have 15 minutes for your primary arguments, and appellant's counsel will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel for appellant, you may introduce yourself and your client and then begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Kyle Wormer-Skirshen and I represent LRD, the mother and appellant in this matter. To begin, I'd like to briefly summarize the facts in this case and then talk about the legal issues. The facts are this. Mother had a child in 2012, May of 2012. From the time of mother's pregnancy, her partner, AR, participated as a parent for this child. The child calls AR dad. AR and mother have held themselves out as mom and dad to the child in this case from birth and before birth up until today. The mother and AR live separately. They live three blocks apart, but they share meals together with their two children. They share vacations together. They share school conferences together. This case originated from AR's desire to legally adopt the child in this case, ND, and mother's support of AR's petition or desire to adopt. Mother brought this petition for termination of parental rights so that AR could adopt the child. Mother brought this petition for termination of parental rights expecting that it would be a default hearing. Mother had not heard from YFK, the biological father, since 2014. YFK did not show up to the first hearing in this termination case, nor the second hearing. YFK showed up late at the third hearing, which was a default hearing in August 2021. Then 7 years prior, YFK had disappeared from this child's life, during which time he was convicted of several domestic abuse convictions in the state of Wisconsin. And most importantly and relevantly to this case, YFK was convicted of felony possession of child pornography in the state of Wisconsin. During that 7 years, YFK did not contact mother in any way, shape, or form and did not provide any form of financial support. The district court in this case recognized these facts and made a finding after trial that YFK is palpably unfit to be a party to the parent-child relationship. In most termination cases, that's probably the end of it. A palpably unfit parent, almost by definition, will lead to a finding that the termination of parental rights is in the child's best interests. Surprisingly, in this case, the trial court got stuck on the second part of the analysis and did not find that the termination would be in the child's best interests. I want to speak first about the child's best interests and then briefly discuss the three other factors that the court did not find present here. About father's grounds, YFK's grounds for termination of parental rights. And that's specifically—
Counsel, yes. Wait, why are the three other grounds relevant to the appeal? Why does it matter since all that is required is one statutory basis for termination and there is one present? Why would it matter if there were four instead of one?
Yeah, I appreciate that question, Your Honor. And I think it does matter because I think it colors how the court has to think about the best interests. If the court doesn't find that the child has been abandoned, but that that YFK is only palpably unfit, I think the court thinks about the best interest factors a little bit differently. So I'll jump into the best interest factors. As the court is aware, there are three factors the court has to consider in determining whether the termination of parental rights is in the child's best interest. Number one, the child's interest in preserving the parent-child relationship. Number two, the parent's interest in preserving the parent-child relationship. And number three, any other factors, any competing interests of the child. With respect to the first factor, as laid out in the brief, it really is important to consider exactly what the statute says, what our case law says, which is what is the child's interest in preserving the parent-child relationship? The word the implies that there is a parent-child relationship. And in this case, the child does not know YFK. YFK probably would not recognize this child on the street. Our argument is simple. The provision requires this court to assess, or the trial court to assess, the parent-child relationship as it exists. The trial court in this case acknowledged there's no relationship. The court suggested that maybe someday there could be a parent-child relationship. I would submit to this court that that is not sufficient. There must
Counsel,
be. Yes.
In looking at the way I read the district court's opinion was that in looking at the parent-child relationship or lack thereof, the district court, I think pretty straightforwardly said that your client had some responsibility for the fact that there was not any sort of parent-child relationship, and took that into consideration. Why would that be an abuse of discretion?
The court did say that, but I would note that the court said some responsibility. In this case, and the transcript's very clear on this, and also, I would note as sort of a side point, the parties largely agreed on the facts in this case as you look at their testimony, which was helpful, I think, is helpful in thinking about this. Father, YFK, biological father, had family in the Twin Cities area. YFK lived in Eau Claire, an hour away. YFK moved to the city of Eden Prairie, as noted in the transcript, for several of the visits. So while the district court did make a finding that mother wasn't helpful in maintaining that relationship by remaining in the city of Eau Claire, the district court, I would submit, did not put this on mother. They said mother had a part, but YFK made no attempt, and there is no evidence in the record of any attempt to have a relationship with this child after 2014.
What do you think that is?
Go ahead, Judge Kerr.
Judge Kerr, why do you think that is, counsel?
Why did YFK make no additional attempt? I think YFK and mother, again, agreed on this point to some extent that YFK began using drugs, had multiple interactions with the criminal justice system beginning in 2014. And so looking at the history, from 2014, there was domestic abuse. Several months later, there was another domestic abuse conviction. There was a third domestic abuse conviction. So the trouble with the criminal justice system began exactly at the time that YFK disappeared from this child's life.
But counsel, even before that, he was expressing a desire to have more of a relationship with the child. And he certainly could have gone to court. Rather easily to do that. Why do you think he didn't? Could it have something to do with child support?
I can't speculate on that, and that wasn't his testimony. And frankly, if you look at the time before that, mother's journal was an exhibit in this case where she actually wrote down really pretty thorough contemporaneous notes. I don't believe it was child support. I just believe from the testimony that YFK had a lot going on in his life between drugs and other things. And this child was way down on the priority list to the point where at one point he just gave up and abandoned the child. The second factor.
Go ahead, Justin.
One more question kind of on this point of the your client bearing, according to the district court, some responsibility for the lack of a parent-child relationship. I read that as perhaps going back to that November 22nd, 2014 conversation, in the park, where mother tells father that she wants him to call papa and have a nuclear family. And that, so couldn't you read the district court's finding in that way?
That I think the court's suggesting perhaps mother didn't want YFK to be involved. You certainly could read it that way, but I would suggest that mother really bent over backwards to drive this child to see YFK repeatedly. Mother testified that she wanted YFK to be part of this child's life. It is true that AR, right, her life partner, was the day-to-day for this child, but that did not look to be an obstacle. And for the time that there was visits, the three of these folks got along reasonably well based on other cases that we see. There was cooperation here. It was simply YFK stopped showing up, stopped texting, stopped calling. There is no instance in the record of mother denying YFK contact with this child when he asked. That was not in the record, that was not testified to at any point.
Counsel, I have a question about, so the district court made a statement in its analysis that mother and AR have not formalized any custody rights with regard to their daughter, and they have not discussed possible custody arrangements with regard to the child at issue here. Are those statements an accurate reflection of the record? And if so, why are they not reasonable grounds for the district court to consider?
Families come in all shapes and sizes. This family raised their children together, their children together to this day. There is no legal relationship between AR and mother as relates to the child in this case, ND. And this is what the purpose of this case was. I would submit that the trial court is reading into the statute a requirement that does not exist when you read about termination of parental rights. There is no requirement that in order to terminate the parental rights, there has to be a second parent ready to step up. That's not in our statute. The district court seemed to imply that there is one. And then there's no requirement in our adoption statute that the parties be married. These two parties raise their children together. They have not found the need to have that legal relationship because they have cooperated and see each other. AR testified he sees these children daily, semi-daily. So this AR has been a constant present in both the children's life, as relevant to this case, ND's life. And I'm submitting to this court that the analysis should be based strictly upon our statute. And our statute does not require that finding that the district court made when it assessed the child's best interests.
And now, I understand that mother's motive, so to speak, was that she wanted AR to be able to adopt child N. But what are the benefits of that? Why would that be so important to her or to the child to allow that adoption?
And there was some reference to this in the district court's order and certainly quite a bit in the testimony. Quite simply, AR wants to be a parent for the reason that just about any adoptive parent wants to be a parent where there's a pre-existing relationship. Social security, inheritance, if something were to happen to LD, he wants to be the parent because he has been the parent. He wants that legal relationship here. In fact, it's probably more so than the party's joint daughter that they have together, where by default, AR would probably be named the father in the event that something happened to mother. That's not the case for the child in this case. Despite the fact that AR has raised this child, he has no rights, and the child, more importantly, has no rights to the inheritance and Social Security and everything else that goes along with the joy and duty and responsibility of being a parent.
that the district court also made a statement, and I'm looking at page 14, that termination is not necessary to ensure the child has a stable environment. And this, I mean, isn't it true that this case is different from a lot of TPR cases where there's the child is at risk and there's potential, very foreseeable bad things that can happen in the future without termination? In this case, it seems like the child is doing well, and that's a good thing. Seems like the child is likely to continue doing well with the status quo. I mean, isn't this a reasonable basis for the district court to find that the best interests are not satisfied?
So that was certainly part of the district court's consideration. However, I would submit that we must stick to the statutes and that this child does have an interest in, if we consider the child's best interest, this child has an interest in having a legal recognition of his dad, the guy he's always known as his dad. And that YFK does not have an interest in preserving the parent-child relationship because that relationship doesn't exist. And in the prior 7 years, when he could have called, written, emailed, texted, anything necessary to try to maintain some form of relationship, that didn't happen. To your point, it's true. This child's doing well. He's doing well in school. He's stable. By all accounts, he has been well cared for by his mom and dad, AR. But that should not be the primary focus of this court's analysis, because that analysis must be based on our case law and our statutes. And I would submit to this court that the trial court got stuck on factors that are not part of the statute, that don't appear in the case law, at least that I was able to ascertain based on the brief of appellant and respondent. I haven't found the similar case to this where the factors found important by the trial court were the factors in other cases.
Thank you very much. You will have an opportunity for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent, you may introduce yourself and your client and begin your argument.
May it please the court, opposing counsel. My name is Connor Burton, and I represent YFK, the father and respondent in this appeal. As your honors know, parental rights may only be terminated for grave and weighty reasons. We submit that those reasons do not exist in this case and that the district court's findings were supported by substantial evidence and are not clearly erroneous. As this court is aware, this was a private TPR action. Early on, Hennepin County Social Services declined to intervene. Therefore, there was no case plan, no services, no social service, social workers reports, or hearing orders. The record.
Why does that help your side? It seems that only occurred because mom was doing such a great job.
I believe it helps because the record is slim, Your Honor. There aren't the normal findings that come along with these kind of cases, that there was a third party saying there's neglect, there's abuse, making determinations on the best interest.
I still don't see how that helped you.
As I'm sure that your honors have read our briefs, I'd like to focus my argument today on the district court's determination that termination of respondents' parental rights was not in the best interest of the child. In any child protection proceeding, the paramount consideration is the best interest of the child.
Wouldn't you agree, counsel, that when we're looking at that, we're not looking just backwards on what's going on, we're looking forward on how soon the parent who's at issue can provide the stability and permanency to the child that's necessary for a relationship. And it seems to me, looking at the facts in this case, the soonest your client would have any right to see this child, and it would probably be supervised and therapeutic, would probably be 5 years from now. How is that in the best interest of the child?
I would respectfully disagree with that position. I believe that my client's on supervised probation until 2023, and his probation officer has indicated that he could begin Skype or Zoom meetings with his child earlier than that, even in a therapeutic setting.
Well, counsel, just a question I have. In this child's life, how many hours or minutes has your client spent in the child's presence?
I don't have a definite answer for Your Honor on that. I'm unsure of how long each individual visit has been. However, I will concede that it has been limited.
It's like at most a day, if you were to count all the hours?
Would say between a day and a week, yes, Your Honor.
Well, I think between a day and a half a day, but that's just my reading of the record. Okay, so now all of a sudden we're going to take this child and try to create a relationship with somebody who he doesn't know, who he's going to learn it'll have to be therapeutic and all these other things because he's a sexual predator, a pedophile. How is that in the best interest of any child? I just can't fathom that, counsel.
Your Honor, the district court and the guardian ad litem, weighing all the evidence, came to the conclusion that it was in the best interest of the child to continue this relationship. The guardian ad litem has 18 years of experience with these type of cases. And in his professional opinion, came to the conclusion that it was in the child's best interest to preserve the parent-child relationship.
But that's conditioned on all kinds of things happening, that he completes treatment for chemical dependency, for battering, for pedophilia, which is almost always untreatable in my experience. All those things have to happen before there'd be any reason to feel there was any best interest in this child of seeing this man again.
We believe that the progress that he has made so far is a good indication of the progress that he'll make going forward.
Well, he hasn't even acknowledged the facts in the porn case, which is one of the preconditions of him moving forward in that treatment program.
I believe the record indicates that his the therapist had been very encouraged by his progress in treatment thus far.
But that isn't in the sexual abuse treatment. That's in the other treatments, isn't it?
It was my understanding, and I would have to review the record a little bit further, but that it was in all of his treatments.
I just recall the guardian ad litem's testimony about what the sex abuse treatment therapist said about his failure to acknowledge the facts of the child pornography charges so that they could move forward with that treatment, which would seem to be the longest and most difficult treatment he has facing him.
We do not deny that it won't be a difficult road, Your Honor. However, my client is motivated to do the work necessary. In this matter, we concede that there is a statutory basis for termination. However, the law is clear that along with the statutory basis, it must be in the child's best interest to terminate. It's our position that the district court properly weighed the evidence when analyzing the three best interest factors and determined that termination was not in the child's best interest. The Minnesota Supreme Court and this court have given very clear instruction and then recognized a trial court's discretion concerning consideration and elucidation of its best interest determinations. In every single termination of parental rights case, the district court must consider and weigh three best interest factors. Different considerations may impact the factors, and the district court must make a record of those considerations, how it weighed them, and how it came to its final decision. When a district court does this, there's very little room for an appellate court to review the determination because of the district court's superior familiarity with the case and its better position to judge the credibility of testimony and evidence. Your Honor, as opposing counsel stated, the facts of this case are generally agreed upon by the parties. While there is some disagreement as to some dates or number of visits, the parties are not that far apart. Based on those facts, the district court performed the required best interest analysis in this case and came to the conclusion that, based on the evidence and testimony received, that termination was not in the child's best interest. This was supported by detailed findings and conclusions in the district court's order issued on March 29th, 2021. The argument appellant makes here today are essentially the same as those made at trial, that respondent does not have a relationship with the child and therefore neither has an interest in preserving the parent-child relationship. The district court considered this argument and didn't find it persuasive.
Are you aware of any case that stands for the proposition, though, that the district court should have done this, where there really was no relationship between your client and the child? You know, the argument, the statute says the relationship, but what's the relationship? None.
I would submit that the relationship is the biological bond between them, that he is this child's biological father.
Okay, so a sperm donor has rights over the father that actually acts like a father the child's entire life?
If the sperm donor, I guess, depending on the situation that the sperm was donated. However, in child protection cases, even alleged fathers have rights until they are proven not to be fathers.
But people that act as fathers and hold themselves out as fathers have rights too. And it's a balancing of those rights where the person like your client has actually tried and had a relationship with the child over time. I just don't see any effort.
We believe that the points made earlier about appellants moving the child out of state, playing gatekeeper, refusing any monetary support, all want to discourage my client from making further effort, that she did play a role in, as gatekeeper, of limiting his access to the child, to his child.
Okay, so that's her role. His is not developing a relationship with the child and then not dealing with his chemical dependency and finding himself in all kinds of problems because beyond his chemical dependency, apparently he's a batterer and he's a pedophile. The chemical dependency didn't create those patterns or issues with your client. Those are him.
And my client owns the mistakes that he's made in the past and is working hard to rectify his life, to make himself into a functioning member of society.
So Burton, I had a question about the factual record on his efforts to see the child. As I understand it, in 2014, when the mother told the father that she wanted him not to be involved, and then at some point after that, I think is when he had his first conviction. Was there an interval of time in between that conversation with mother and his first conviction? And if so, why did he, an interval of time when there was an absence of any visits with the child? And if so, why? In other words, I guess, according to the record, did he testify about why he was not so engaged during that period of time?
I do believe, Your Honor, that there was a factual finding number 21 that after Nico's birthday on May 14th, that Ms. Dunbar, respondent texted appellant, and for the most part that she did not respond. It's our position that continued even after the November 14th. I know that My client believed that he had visitation after that. The court did not find that argument persuasive. But
I think it was in the next paragraph of findings talks about the visit in November of 14, and that's when she told him that she wanted to maintain a nuclear family without him. And then the following finding says that his life spiraled out of control in 2015 and 2016. I guess I'm curious about the period between November of 14 and his criminal conduct in 2016. Is there any explanation in the record for his absence of contact during that period?
There is not, Your Honor.
Thanks.
Your Honor, it's appellant's burden to demonstrate that respondent, as the natural parent, is not fit to be a party to the parent-child relationship. The argument that terminating respondent's parental rights will allow mother's ex-boyfriend to adopt the child rings hollow, especially considering that said ex-boyfriend did not and may still not have a legal relationship with his own daughter. For the above discussed reasons, respondent requests that this court affirm the district court's decision. Thank you for hearing us. At this time, if your honors do not have any other questions, I will yield the remainder of my time and rely on my brief.
Matt, you're muted.
Sorry about that. It appears there are no further questions for you. So thank you for your argument, Mr. Burton. Counsel for appellant, you have an opportunity for 5 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I don't know that I'll need 5 minutes. I wanted to clarify two things stated by counsel for respondent and then mention some additional finding by the district court. So counsel for respondent stated that YFK could have some Zoom contact with the child. I think there was some mention of that, but that was not a finding of the district court. And I don't believe that was in the guardian ad litem report. And to the contrary, as the court likely saw in the district court's order, the district court was quite clear that they don't see any realistically soon path for YFK to see this child. In fact, the district court said specifically, it is highly questionable whether YFK could parent this child in the reasonably foreseeable future.
The district court did recognize the possibility that there could be a relationship before the child turns 18, correct?
Yes, and I would agree with the court's statement earlier, what that timeline looks like, you know, what's reasonably foreseeable future, certainly at least 3 or 4 or 5 years. We know that YFK is going to be on probation, I believe, at least through 2024. And then, as noted in the district court order, you're talking about significant therapeutic intervention to try to introduce a child to a parent that the child has never met before. And when the court weighs that against the child's father, the person the child knows as father, I would submit it's quite clear which of those options is in the child's best interest.
If I may, counsel, it sounds to me like what you're saying is, look, if a court has found that, which it did here, that mothers prove by clear and convincing evidence that the father is palpably unfit to parent, that you really don't go on to the second best interest analysis. So my question is, can you imagine, and I know you would say it wasn't here, some situation where a parent was, that statutory ground was proven of palpable unfitness, where could be conceivably in the child's best interest not to terminate the parent-child relationship?
Yeah, I think that is possible, Your Honor. In fact, I could see that in many cases. If the parent had been actively involved, right? Imagine those cases where the parent has sexually abused a child, which sadly I've seen, right? We've seen these cases. And that parent goes to prison and that child is writing letters. That parent has financial resources and is sending money. that parent is reaching out against, right? Nobody wants that parent involved, and that parent is trying. That wasn't here. You know, those cases where a parent has done something awful and atones for that and wants to be a parent, and there's a relationship that existed to preserve, that case, I would submit, is probably not that rare. But what is rare in this case is this parent, quote unquote, YFK, didn't invest that much time when the biological mom, my client, lived down the road, you know, every month or so. Hey, can I see the baby? Sure, let's get together. And then he just disappeared. And no attempt, right? We know he was probably sober in prison. We know he had time to reflect. He couldn't write a letter. He couldn't make some attempt to say, hey, you know, I'm still here. I'd like this relationship to exist. And mother testified she wanted it to exist in some form. And he disappeared 7 years. And this was a 9-year-old child at the time of trial. And so to show up now and say, you know, I want to be there, we reject that. That's why we're here. And the last point that I want to touch on, as noted in our brief, we reject the idea that mom rejected support, that mom acted as gatekeeper. Did mom reach out and say, hey, I want you to see this child again? No, she did have concerns about drug use. She did have concerns about YFK. But we reject that, and I don't believe the record supports that mom totally dismissed dad or tried to thwart him.
Counsel, is it your position, because this is what I sensed from reading the record, is your client did what she could to foster a relationship until it became obvious that the appellant or the respondent wasn't managing his chemical dependency issue, which she was aware of. And obviously had the cocaine conviction, I think, from prior to their relationship.
Very much so. And that is in the record in terms of, you know, why we reject the gatekeeping. Father and, you know, YFK and appellant agreed. Mother drove this child from Minneapolis to Eau Claire to see YFK at his request. You know, that's the sort of effort that we don't often see in this kind of tumultuous relationship. And that's where I would submit mother maybe doesn't get enough credit here for the steps she took. She pursued and supported the relationship until she did not feel it was safe to do so any further. And then father just, did, you know, YFK didn't show up after that.
Thank you, Mr. Vermeers-Kierken. Thank you to both attorneys for your arguments. The case is submitted. The court will issue its opinion within 45 days as required by law.